As always, this episode of the Talking Wolves podcast is brought to you by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Why not make Green King your go-to destination for this season's final stretch? With delicious food and refreshing beverages, every single one of Wolves' televised fixtures is on show at their venues. And with 900 sport venues across the UK, there's a chance there's one just walking distance from where you are. And watching football is way better with your friends and family. So why not get the squad together for some title showdowns, the race for European qualification, and nail-biting relegation six-pointers. So don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on.
Hello, welcome back to the Talking Wolves podcast. I am your host, Matt Cooper. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Dave Azzopardi and Jordan Russell, but also by Johnny Phillips. Johnny, how are you keeping, mate? Good to see you.
Very well. It's good to see you three as well. It's been a while.
I know the last time that you came on, I think it was the last time, it was on the eve of O'Neill coming in. And I remember you saying, do you want to get this podcast out as soon as possible? Because I think this news will be old news.
they're about to announce Lopetegui's departure, weren't they?
Yeah, because I remember I spoke to you in the week and you mentioned about O'Neill and I thought, surely not. And you were right, mate. you were bang on the money. But before we crack on with the podcast, Dave, Jord, how you been keeping? Listen to the pod last week. Enjoyed it.
All good, mate. All good, thank you. Yeah.
Sound. All good.
How was Copenhagen, Jord?
It's good. It's really good. I got sucked in a little bit, really, on the Tuesday night. We were out there for quarterly business reviews, and I was presenting on the Wednesday slot, and Tuesday night got in at 20-2. It was not good. They got me in with some. But they said, we do this thing here, like we shot schnapps. Was I alright? Like peach schnapps or whatever? No, we just call it schnapps. I'm like, right, okay. It was like battery acid. I had four or five of them when I was away with the fairies, but it was a very enjoyable time. I was hanging out my arse in the office on Wednesday, but we pulled through and we lived to fight another day.
You're quite fortunate with your job though, aren't you? You get to travel quite a lot. Well, say fortunate, depends if you can be bothered.
Yeah, I get to see some weird and wonderful places, I guess, in a way of that you wouldn't normally see. And it gives me some opportunities. I've got to go to Krakow next month, we work as well. So that's another place to stick off. So it's nice. It's all good.
Can you, just before we move on, Joel, can I get your opinion on Dave's facial hair? And
I was gonna comment on it, but it's got the Ben Whites about it, hasn't it?
I've done like three or four videos with this week, and not one person has commented. And now everyone's going to be thinking, flipping it. It does look crap. Yeah. He'll be gone next week. Don't worry.
He'll be gone, definitely. Yeah. Johnny, what have you been up to? What you were covering West Ham game, weren't you, on Sunday?
Yeah, I did West Ham Fulham on Sunday. It was great. Do you know what? The reporter's position for when we do the interview shift is right behind the away dugout. And I was sat directly behind Traore and Jimenez thinking, if only we could have those two on our bench these days. But there you go. It was great fun. It was a good game to do. I've seriously got a lot of time for Fulham. They're really impressive the way they try and play football. And I love Marco Silva. You know, if ever there's an opportunity to get him here, if we're ever looking for a manager at some stage down the line, I'd love Marco Silva at Wolves. But it was good. Good game. Really good game. Yeah.
I've seen on your your Instagram, you've been doing quite a lot of, or it feels like you've been doing like quite a lot of the games on the weekend. You seem to be all over the country.
Yeah, it's mad. I mean, Easter weekend was mad. I think I did Wrexham, Brentford, Stoke and Portsmouth. I think I went to every sort of corner of the country, and it was great fun. It's a great time of year. There's loads going off, and arguably the lower leagues is where there's the most fun going on at the moment now, especially with the playoffs. On the horizon, it's just brilliant. So it's been really good fun. I did Portsmouth Derby. That was a great game, and getting Portsmouth back in the Championship will be brilliant as well. It's a proper club that. So no, it's been really good.
Definitely, and I believe you've got an event coming up that you'd like to tell everyone all about. I've seen the posters for it. It looks great, but I'm sure I'll let you do more justice than I could explain.
Yeah, it's It's I suppose you could say it's one for the oldies. Certainly not you lads era. And I hold on,
Jordan will have something to say about that.
we've got as many of the remaining 1974 League Cup winning team back together for one last time for a night at the Grand. It's going to be on Tuesday the 14th May at the Wolverhampton Grand Theatre. It's called Wolves Wembley Wonders. And it's a celebration, not really just of that amazing cup final where they beat an incredible Man City team that had the likes of Rodney Marsh, Dennis Law, Summer B. Bell, all these great players in it, but also the 70s as a whole, which in truth is the last successful era the club have had, really. A couple of trophies, a European final, and lots of European qualifications. So we've got most of the lads who are still alive back together. And it should be a really good celebration. Loads of footage as well of the time that the players have dug out their own personal footage and other stuff. And it's in support of the Wolves Foundation as well, because the Wolves Foundation are brilliant. They do so much good work, particularly around loneliness and Alzheimer's and dementia. So we've sort of tied that all in, really. And the foundation are coming along, sort of back in the night, and we'll hopefully get as many ticket sales as possible to support the foundation as well.
Absolutely. If people do want to come, where can they buy the tickets from, Johnny?
So they can just go onto the Wolverhampton Grand website. If you Google that, you will find it soon enough. If you Google Wolves Wembley Wonders at the Grand, you will find it, and then you can get your tickets there. So, yeah, please do come along and support it if you're listening to this. Or if you're too young for it, just bring your dad or your granddad, whatever.
if you are listening to this, we'll be dropping a retweet or a post on our socials as well over the coming days. So if you can't be bothered to Google it, then I'm sure you'll see it.
I'll put a link in the description of the pod as well.
Make it so comfortable for the listeners, don't you?
Yeah.
Cool. We will be touching on the Forest game and the upcoming Arsenal game. Probably a little bit more of a light touch than we usually would, because we've having Johnny on. We'll probably discuss more about the club and its future and transfers and all that stuff that everyone is probably more interested in. But Dave, Forest game at the weekend, I didn't go. I don't think you did. But to me, it was a poor game of football between two fairly average sides in the end.
Yeah. I think obviously Johnny touched on it. It looked like it was, lots of almost excitement, but in terms of the quality of the actual football, it was pretty poor, which pretty much sums it up, to be honest. I don't think we really played at the level that I've seen Wolves play before. But I suppose with having Matheus Cunha back, it was a huge, huge boost for us. You could see the quality that he added, which we've missed desperately over the last few weeks or so. Ignoring missing was frustrating. I think with him in that squad, we could have probably gone on to get the 3 points. But ultimately, I think a draw was pretty much the fair result. Wolves lacked that little bit of quality going forward, and Forest just sloppy all over, really. And I feel we gifted them both goals as well.
Yeah, I suppose so. I also feel like they gifted us two goals as well. I know the Cunha goal is brilliant, but take away nothing from Cunha, the defending is art. It's like if you're Sunday League, you're under sevens, Dave, you'd have been fuming at your under 11s team that you used to manage. Yeah. But Jord, Cunha back in from the start, it did make a massive difference. I know the overall kind of performance wasn't fantastic, but just having him in there, you can see that he's almost levels above what we've been playing at recently.
Yeah, for sure. And he's a top quality footballer, and cost 50 million quid for a reason, right? I think you can tell though as well, I think there's been clamours and almost a bit of people taking the piss a little bit out of Sarabia's lack of making passes to Fraser or Chuomi when they were up top. And actually, you can just see when Cunha's up there, the whole team just trusts there's someone to play off a little bit more and give him the ball in tight areas, let him play and express himself. And that's what you see with that first goal. Like I say, I think the defending from a Forest point of view is shocking. Really, really bad. They've had multiple times just to just bring him down at any point, really, as long as he's not in the box. And they had so many opportunities to do so. But as soon as he's cut inside, it's an unbelievable finish, isn't it? But you can't give anyone with that sort of quality in the Premier League that sort of time, so they'll punish you, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, Johnny, it's good to see that even after a fairly long layoff, was it 7 or 8 weeks? He was pretty anonymous last week, but at the Forest game, he's come back and he's like the Cunha of old, which is a massive boost for Wolves.
Yeah, huge boost as well, because he does give us that little bit of ball carrying quality at the top end of the pitch, which not only takes opposition players out of shape, but helps get ours in it as well. And it's really good that I do love watching him. And he just seemed to seize his moment. He probably had done his homework on a particularly poor Nottingham Forest defence. They really struggle at the back, and he was absolutely gifted that goal, that opening goal. The way he just cut inside, it was criminal defending. But it's great from our perspective to have him back, and he became a focal point, and you know, he's become that. And I think he seems to really relish the opportunity of just being back out on the pitch again. It was just a shame that we're still quite not up to full strength up top, but yeah, brilliant to have him there.
Yeah, I thought even with having Wanker back in, I've seen a couple of people say he looks miles off it, but I thought he made a fairly good impact off the bench. But it wasn't long after the Cunha goal that there's an incident that, well, there's a couple of incidents within the goal that people have been giving their 10 pennies worth. First off, Dave, is the actual goal. I've seen a few people blame Sarr, and don't get me wrong, like, I've been critical of Sarr this season, and I'm always the one to probably put the boot in on him more than you guys. But I don't know how you can blame Sarr there. It's happened in a flash. It's a reaction. I think, if anything, as well, Semedo's a little bit naive not to go down, because it's a clear shove from Gibbs Ward, because he rides it and stands up. I think the goal stands still.
Yeah, I saw that on social media straight away about Sarr. But when I watched the goal back, I think João Gomes stood right in front of him as well, who misses the clearance. And I'm not saying it's an easy clearance to make, but I think as a goalkeeper, when you stood right behind a defender or whatever, or a midfielder who's going to try and clear the ball, it's very difficult, especially when he completely misses it. Sarr's going to have such a short amount of time to react to it. You know, you talk about this line of vision from last week and so on, but now, you know, when you're defending, it's a similar sort of thing. But the push on Semedo, I didn't notice in real time, to be honest. And again, I only sort of saw people moan about it late Saturday night and Sunday, to be honest. So, look, you're going to have some of those go your way. You're going to have some go against you. I think that's just been us being petty more than anything, if I'm completely honest.
I think if he does go down, though, it's given us a foul. Personally, it's two hands in the back.
Yeah, yeah, but the there's no reaction for. I thought the goal that West Ham had disallowed last week was soft, to be fair, on the foul. But because Semedo's gone down, you've given the referee that decision to make. Whereas you're right, I think if he stood up, you won't get it. If he does go down, I think that the referee would go to the monitor or VAR would have a look at it. But I bet they didn't even consider that for longer than 5 or 10 seconds, to be honest.
And who else was going to get the goal? Gibbs White. Mm-hmm. George, I don't know how you feel about this, but I don't really understand why he got so much stick. I don't think he helped himself in the cup fixture when he did the celebration, but Wolves fans have pretty much gone for his throat ever since he left, but then absolutely hate it when he gives it them back. I think you give as good as you get, personally.
He's the pantomime villain, isn't he? I think that's what it is. And I think, look, I had no issue with the fact we moved him on last year, and he went and I'd say even when he come to Molly, he got booed a little bit, didn't he, from memory. But the cup game, I think the cup game and the celebration from this penalty in the shootout is what ignited it a little bit more and left that bit of a sour taste in Wolves fans' mouths. But I mean, if it was happening to you, I mean, I know if I was Morgan Gibbs White, I'd be doing exactly the same. He gets pelters all game. He gets a goal, 6-0. He's just antagonised. He's playing pantomime villain. I think, people take it a bit too close to heart, really, with it all. But it was always going to be him, wasn't it? You know, it was always going to impact the game. I always thought it'd be him and Chris Wood the weekend, and at least, you know, got one out of two at my bingo, right?
and to be honest, mate, I thought the fans saying he was crap. I thought he had a really good game. Everything good about Forest came through him.
Who's that? Gibbs White.
Yeah,
he was one of the better players on the pitch. Yeah. I thought, to be honest, he always is. Whenever I watch Gibbs White, he always tries to make things happen, and he's just everywhere on the pitch. The one thing in regards, I get the celebration thing, because as football fans, we can't expect to give give stick out to players and not receive it back. But the one thing I didn't like was when he shushed, unless Sarabi said something, I don't know, but he shushed Sarabi right in the face. Yeah, that, I didn't like that part of things, but I don't know. I think he burnt those bridges literally as soon as he left. There were certain comments, and then the Cup game just, you know, sorts it all out. So be interesting to see. It wasn't that bad when he was at Molineux, but it'll be interesting to see if he gets the Nunes treatment from next year onwards. As
what's your thoughts on it, Johnny? Do you think it's warranted from Wolves fans or
no? I think Wolves fans have taken it too personally, and I think they're I think he was well within his rights to have that celeb. I love fan players giving it to supporters who've just been dealing out a load of stick, and if the supporters can't suck it up, then they want to have a look at themselves first rather than the player doing it. It's tough. It's really tough. And, you know, they're subjected to a lot of abuse during games. So that was his moment. And he did it quite cleverly because he ran over to the Forest fans and the way he just turned at the Wolves fans, I thought fair play to him. I'm with you on that, really. It's, you know, he's well within his rights to do that. And if he goes and does it, then the Wolves fans need to be looking at themselves in the mirror if they're getting het up about that.
Especially because I know they were singing it, these misses with a slag as well. So, like, I can't, you know what? I think if I was playing, they were singing that about my misses, then I'd probably do the same.
Yeah, so, join in. What, join in?
We'll probably start running. <Yeah. laughs> So, I do get it. I think fans are taking to heart a little bit, though.
Yeah. I mean, fans can be really funny and have got a great sense of humour. But they can get really childish at times when someone does something they don't like. So, it was Gibbs White's moment, that, and just suck it up.
Yeah, I've seen some of the nuclear takes on Twitter, because there seems to be, over the last couple of years, I think there's a few incidents that have led to it. There seems to be a bit of needle between Wolves and Forest, whether it's the Cup game, White, the FFP breaches.
It's always lingered under the surface. I remember going there about 20 years ago, over 20 years ago, and it was Dave Jones's first game as Wolves manager in the FA Cup, and we won 1-0 there. And I was in the away end, and it was proper toxic atmosphere that day, and the Forest fans were giving Dave Jones all sorts. And it's just, I think there's always been a little something with Forest. I remember a League Cup tie going even further back when Collymore and Brian Roy and all that sort of destroyed us at our place, and it was, there always seem to be good games with a bit of niggle. I like that.
Yeah.
They're a proper club. It's a great club, Forest. You know, it is a proper club with a proper fan base and a proper history. So I love Wolves Forest matches.
Last season, when I went to Forest, we went to the Cup game and the League game, and I remember saying to you, Dave, that the atmosphere last season was the best I've been to in years, I'd say.
Yeah, I remember us doing it on the pod, and we said the same thing. The Cup game, although we lost and come away from it, it's probably the best atmosphere I've been in since pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it was that good. It was really good. Really, really good.
Yeah, that the Mullican tie where they sing Ghosts
around. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's class. It's proper, still got quite a lot of character, hasn't it, the club? But it seems to be, a bit in need, especially with the FFP ruling as well. I know, profit and sustainability, they were arguing that Wolves had sold Neves and whatnot. And I think Wolves are saying, hold on a second, something to do with us, plus it's in a different financial year. So,
yeah.
You know. I think the ownership model there with Marinakis makes him a little less likable.
I think so. I think I can imagine. Well, I know he's a very challenging owner to work for. So yeah,
I can imagine. I can't imagine him and Nuno getting on. I feel like they probably rub each other up the wrong way.
Yeah, I imagine they do. I think George Mendes is a bit of a buffer there. You know, Mendes' relationship with Forest is probably what it was once with Wolves, and I think he's definitely the buffer for anything there. And Nuno probably won't have to deal with him too much unless he storms down like he did at that Liverpool match and Wade gone down through the tunnel. But yeah. Owners pitching up pitch side and tunnel side is always a red flag for me, that.
Haven't he in Greece, had he gone on the pitch with a gun? Is that the same Marakis?
It definitely happened, but I don't know if it was him.
I think it was him.
It did happen in Greece. They're all.
I was listening to TalkSport the weekend. I messaged you about it, Dave. And Jamie O'Hara was on, and he spoke about under McCarthy where Steve Morgan had gone down at half time, said to Mick, sit down, and told the players to have more shots because of the wind. Does that sound like something Morgan would do, doesn't it? You can't be doing that though, can you?
No, he regretted that. I remember when me and Paul Berry went up to see him a year or so ago, we talked about that moment, and he regretted that. Mm. You can't just go in there and do that. He's not hot headed, but he's quite a fiery character, Morgan. He's very, very passionate. But yeah, even he admitted he well overstepped the mark on that occasion.
I can imagine.
It was a Marinakis, sorry, Matt. It was a Greek owner, but it was a Marinakis.
Oh, is it not? My apologies. Just in case. Defamation letter at the front door. As I previously said, Hwang coming on. I thought Hwang looked good personally. I thought he looked really good. Looked full of energy. People saying he looked miles off it, but I didn't see that personally. I thought if anyone looked off it, it was Sarabia.
Yeah, I think Hwang added that little bit that we've been missing, and you know, just a little bit more confidence going forward. I think obviously you've mentioned already Fraser and Chiuomo or whatever, and although I don't think the service has always been there, that there's lack confidence. They look scared to be on the pitch, whereas with Hwang straight away, you could just see that we've got another senior attacker on, because he ran at them. He tries to cause Forest a few issues. So I think obviously he's not going to be fully fit yet. But imagine if Wolves can get Neto back for the last two or three games, we might actually have a couple more wins under our belt, hopefully before the end of the season. But having Hwang back, especially before what we've got three home games coming up now in a row, if we can get a good amount of minutes out of him for those three, and Cunha still getting a good amount of minutes, we'll look a lot better going forward, hopefully.
And hopefully Bellegarde's not too far away as well. You have some rotation between them. I thought he did well when he come on. I thought Sarabia again looked miles off it, almost disinterested. I don't know how you interpreted it. I know, Jordan, we're big fans of him, but I thought the last two or three weeks he's really pissed me off.
Cuts a bit of a frustrated figure, and noticed a few times in the first half he wasn't getting the ball and his arms were up and aloft and like shrugging about, and I'm like, I don't like that. And I think they're all couple of that though. I think you see Cunha do it sometimes and Hwang and Neto. I'm like, it just doesn't, there's no need for it really. Just you're going to lose the ball, it's football,
you're going to make bad,
in the first half. I think he's just cut a very sort of frustrated figure recently, because I think he feels like he's trying to drag the team forward and he's the one doing that. And there might be some truth in that. I'd argue differently. I think Gaitnery's been a revelation further up the pitch. But, there's just a lot of frustration with the team. And I think a lot of that comes down to how the season, I don't want to say it's petered out yet, but it's petering out. I think we were in a real strong position before that Coventry game in the league, and potentially getting a cup semi-final, and we know that lack of investment or lack of squad depth, to put it politely, has probably cost us. Which definitely cost us a trip to Wembley, put it like that.
I don't know how you feel about it, Johnny, but that Coventry game almost feels akin to the Leeds game a couple of seasons ago under Large. You know, we turn it up and we end up spewing it 3-2. And then it all went tits up from there. That's what that Coventry game feels like to me now.
Yeah, it was a big, big blow that. And also the way Gary O'Neill went for Mark Robbins afterwards as well was unnecessary. And it was sort of, you could tell they were hurt. You could tell they were really, really hurt by that, because it was a huge opportunity to end the season on such a high. And through no fault of their own, really, a relatively small squad with a lot of injuries, they've sort of, it looks likely that it will peter out to some degree. And it was just a shame that it happened the way it did. I think it was a real blow, that Coventry game, and it's probably going to take quite a while to get over, and we're probably just seeing the sort of those frustrations. They're a funny bunch of the players. They care immensely, but they don't all get on. I think Gary O'Neill himself has said sometimes it's a bit like being a childminder or a school teacher trying to control them. I mean, they are characters.
I feel on his pardon.
I mean, they are characters. Historically, teams that don't get on have done all right at Wolves. The Dave Jones promotion winning team famously didn't get, a lot of the characters didn't get on there. And I think And the Wolves team, his current Wolves team, has characters, vocal people, and they're not afraid to share their opinions. And that's sometimes I was what George was saying about those reactions on the pitch. I don't like that sort of stuff, but you know, it can manifest itself in different ways.
I heard that O'Neill had said that he'd stop the players from doing something about all these contentious VAR decisions. I don't know what they had planned, but O'Neill had said in his post-match press conference that he'd stop the players from doing something. He wouldn't say what, but now he was saying if they wanted to do it again, I couldn't stop them because of my reaction after the West Ham game.
Yeah, that West Ham game was a particularly volatile situation, you know, off the pitch at the end of that one. That was quite, that looked like Gary O'Neill had, it was too much even for him, that decision. So, yeah, things changed. I mean, there's a sense of injustice, but you've got to channel it the right way. I think, you know, you can't go around with a chip on your shoulder saying, oh, we're getting, and thinking it's a conspiracy theory. You've got, however hard it is, you've got to just go into every game as if it's a clean slate. But I suppose when you've had the amount of knocks Wolves have had with those decisions, it's inevitable that it's going to leave a lasting impact.
Yeah, I do get that. And I saw the interview with Jose Sarr. I think he did it with Sky Sports, actually. Yeah. Saying that VAR would cost us 10 points this season, but failed to mention that he'd got beat from a corner the week before. So, you know, these things are frustrating, but I feel like it's not the reason that we're in a position that we are is not just down to those decisions. I think squad length is a big issue, but also, man, the last few weeks, just like individual sloppiness, especially in defence. So,
yeah, and you can't be bleating about 10 points. I don't know how you work that out, because if you're then, Jose Sarr's not going through all the decisions opponents have not had against us, is he, in all their dodgy, unlucky decisions? I think you're really clutching at straws if you start putting a currency and a figure on how many points Wolves have lost to VAR. That's not the route to go down.
I mean, they do say it evens itself out over the season, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. Wolves, I think we've probably been.
Yeah, we probably had a
hard done by them the most, but I just think, like you said, channel that elsewhere. Just to finish off the Forest game, Dave. Forest had quite a lot of chances as well that they should have done better with. I think on reflection, a point is a fair result, but also it's probably not a bad result considering what Forest are still fighting for.
Yeah, there's lots of ways you can look at it. I know obviously some people will be frustrated because again you've dropped points possibly to a team that are still battling relegation, but also Forest, if you actually look at some of their results and how they've been playing, they haven't been awful. You know, they've really been competitive in some of their matches and given teams difficult games, especially, you know, going away from home. So it wasn't the, I don't think we were brilliant. Forest had a lot of opportunities, but I think at times they did show why they're struggling a little bit because of, you know, I think the last 5 or 10 minutes, the quality of the passing of the ball was just awful. You know, some of the misplaced passes. So, I would have gone into it. I predicted 1-1. I'd take a 2-2. And obviously, for us, the big advantage and the big positive is that we've got Cunha back and firing as well. And hopefully he'll continue that before the end of the season.
Absolutely. Another tough game, though, on Saturday under the lights. Half 7 kickoff, isn't it, on Saturday? Against Arsenal. Johnny, is it a good time to be playing Arsenal after the weekend? Are they going to crumble again, or are they a bit of a wounded animal? I don't think there's ever a good time, is there?
No, I think you're probably right on the second one. I think the wounded animal analogy is probably more likely. He was really unhappy, Arteta, in his post-match interviews yesterday. And I think, I mean, the one thing, they've got a European game, haven't they, this week? Is that right?
Yeah, they're playing Bayern, yeah.
So that might work in Wolves' favour in terms of, you know, statistically teams coming on the back of an away trip like West Ham yesterday against a team who's got all week to prepare for the game makes a big difference. So that will help Wolves just in terms of the sort of strength and conditioning and fitness levels. But I think there'll be... I mean, it's absolutely last chance saloon. They've got to win every match now. Just like Liverpool, I think they've got to win every match to overhaul City and just hope. And even then, that might not be enough. So, yeah, I think it's definitely the wounded animal. So we'll see. It'll be an interesting one.
Dave, I'm hoping that it's the wheels have fallen off. There seems to be some absolute catastrophic. Well, a lot of Arsenal fans catastrophizing, saying it's done, it's finished. But I know City are in, you know, in pole position now, and it's, you know, it's second nature for them now. But it's still really tight at the top. So I still think that Arsenal are, well, probably more than likely turn us over. But
yeah, it's so tight. All it takes is, I know City, when they want to turn it on, they'll turn it on. But you know, they can drop points. You know, we've beaten them at Molineux. I don't think we'll go to the Etihad and win, but you know, they can definitely drop points, and it'll make the title race interesting again. I think there was one bookmakers earlier already paying out on people that are bet on City to win the league. I think
it's normally Paddy Power, isn't it?
I think it's Betfred or something. Yeah, but we tend to have fairly. I say this, last year we at the Emirates we really struggled, but we had fairly competitive games against Arsenal. I think just before Lopetegui joined was when we played him at Molineux last, and we were quite unlucky there. We probably should have had, talking about VAR and referees, we should have had a penalty on Guedes, and that would have changed the game completely. But it was a fairly tight game, so I don't know. I think under the lights at Molineux, you know, anything can happen. And I'm just hoping that, because after Coventry, there were people commented saying, I don't think Wolves are going to win another game again this season. And I don't think we have yet. But, no. You know, I'm just hoping, you know, we've got a run of three home fixtures now. Two look fairly favourable, but saying that, Bournemouth have been in fantastic form. Luton are still, you know, still fighting for their lives, so it's going to be a difficult game. So, who knows? It'd be typical Wolves to turn over Arsenal and drop points in the next two. But, you know.
Jordan, how'd you see this one going? Do you think the half seven kickoff could have a positive impact? Because, you know, historically, Wolves, Molineux under the lights is a great place to play football at.
Yeah, I think it could, right? I think a lot will go with what happens on Wednesday night. I think they're playing Bayern. I think you see this Arsenal team, they're a very like emotional squad in terms of, you know, for better or for worse, you know, they are very emotive about how they play. And I think if they go to the Allianz and get turned over, I think that'll be like a dagger in the art, literally. I think that'll be almost be like, it's what happened with Liverpool, right? They lost to Atalanta, then they lose again on the weekend. It's almost like double bubble. So, yeah, I really, you know, I hope that the lights will be a factor, the late kickoff 100%. But I just hope we turn them over because I hate that club with a passion. And I've got, it's like this irrational hatred for Arsenal. Like, it's just the fans and the entitlement, yeah. And I just hate them. And like, I know people say, oh, it's boring watching City win the league, but honestly, I'll take City win it 10 times in a row then watch Arteta lift the trophy, honestly. So I hope they come to Molineux and we turn them over, because I think it'll be the funniest thing ever.
Who would you rather in the title, Johnny?
Who would I rather what?
Win the title out of City, Arsenal and Liverpool.
Liverpool, really. And, Liverpool were the team I loathed growing up as a kid, you know, living there, coming from there. I always find their fans entitled. And Everton was the team I had a really big soft spot for back home. But since I've moved away from the city, I feel a bit fonder, you know, from a distance. I like Klopp. I know he can be a Marmite figure, but I really, really like Klopp. So I suppose if there was one of the three that I'd like to see win it, probably to send Klopp off. But, you know, I wouldn't say any of them were on my Christmas card lists, to be brutally honest.
Dave, how about you, mate, if you could pick? Mine City by an absolute buzz ride. But
probably in preference to be City, Arsenal and Liverpool, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think mine would be as well. I know Arsenal fans, when there's been a fair few links between Neto and Arsenal over the last couple of years. I know that you've reported on it, Dave, on Talking Wolves. There's so many Arsenal fans with access to like Twitter accounts. It's ridiculous.
It's weird, yeah. They're social, like everyone that I interact with in terms of doing content with have been, they're sound. But Arsenal, like Twitter is like ridiculous. Like I did a video, like a live stream like this with an Arsenal fan before, and the guy was asking if the probability of them signing Neto. And I said, I think it was right before the end of the transfer window we played them. And I was like, no, I can't see it happening. I think you'll have another 6 months. Within like 5 minutes, it was all these people quoting what I'd said. And on my whole timeline was full of it and tagging me. It's like, flipping heck. Like, I've never had that before from a fan base. So crazy.
I remember something similar. It was when I think Ornstein had reported it. Not this summer, the summer before. And the transfer window was still opening. He picked up a knock when he couldn't play in the cup game, and I tweeted before the game, Arsenal fans, if you don't see Neto he's not in the lineup, it's because he's injured. It's something to do with the speculation. What, 2,000 quotes? People giving me shit about it. I'm just staying fact. I'm trying to help you out, but I don't know. I'm not feeling too confident about this one. But Johnny, would you put Hugo Bueno back into the lineup? Before against Forest, he came on and did a job, and I thought Doc has looked a little bit shaky in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm not. I think Hugo Bueno probably needs to play as well. I think I wouldn't have a problem with putting him back into the starting lineup at all. I think he's someone who's just going to get better.
He needs game time, though.
He needs game time, absolutely. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the players who goes in the summer, whether it be loan or on permanent.
I think his name is on that list of potential sales, yeah. Yeah.
I don't think you're getting much for him, though.
No, it doesn't get a vast amount, but you get a fee, I think. You get
five, ten, maybe. Maybe.
Was he linked with Celtic in January?
Celtic. Yeah. And there were some decent-sized clubs after him at the start of the year as well, I think. Moves back to Spain and...
Celtic could be a great move for him.
I think they rejected a loan move as well, like in the summer for him and in January, so it'll be interesting in him.
Cool. Should we move on to the questions? Johnny, there's quite a lot of, well, most of the questions are just for you. I think I'll ask the questions and we'll probably kind of elaborate on some other things, and we'll go tangent on in and out of things. But a Mars Music show has asked, does Johnny have any insight in what the club's plans will be if we're unable to sell Neto in the summer? Will the club be actively looking to sell one of the other big assets?
I think the Neto injury has really muddied the waters. If you looked at a fully fit Neto, you could get a really big fee for him. At a peak Neto, you get a huge fee for him, and then you could do a lot of summer strengthening on that one transfer fee, and you'd have only lost one player, and you could bring in, say, you brought in four or five. The squad is bigger. You've got more options. Now, with his injury record, there's a question over that, and a question over the club's willingness to spend money on him. And you know, if clubs aren't going to spend money on him, then where do Wolves get money from? I think Ait Nouri is the one who's attracting the most interest. He's really, really well thought of by a lot of clubs, and you know, if a big money offer comes in for him, then that would be the obvious place to look for to generate income. I mean, others, I mean, I know João Gomes is another who's really impressed as well. I don't know what you get in terms of a fee for him yet. And he's probably someone that they wouldn't really want to sell. But as always with Wolves, and I think it should apply to any club really that wants to go about its business properly, that every player has a price. You can't say, oh, he's not for sale. That's not nonsense. I think if players and Kilman, for example, Max Kilman, if they got a huge bid came in for him, I think they'd accept it straight away. So every player has a price in that level. I just think Pedro Neto just looked like the obvious player to go for decent money, say maybe a while ago, and now it doesn't look that obvious anymore. So then you're left sort of thinking, well, where do you generate money for squad strengthening, and where do you, you know, what are you prepared to let go? So it's fascinating, but I think Ait Nouri would be the one who'd bring in the most money if we're looking away from Neto.
I think with Neto, obviously the sale would be dependent on who else has been sold and for how much. But do you think Wolves could be in a position, Johnny, where they say, for example, clubs are only offering 40 million, where Wolves are like, you know what, we'll take that considering his injury record? Or do you think they'll hold on to him and hopefully he has another good season? And also the player's probably going to be putting pressure on to go to.
Yeah, I think they'd take it. I mean, because they've already proved that they can play without him. It's great when he's there, but he's been out for long spells, and Wolves have found a way of winning matches without him on the pitch. Obviously, it's much better to have him. But so I think they would take 40 million, absolutely, if it was offered. It's just a shame when it was, it was double that figure that was being talked about when he was at the peak. And I just wonder if that's that number's gone now forever. Mm-hmm. And you realistically would only get as much as 40 for him.
Do you know what Wolves were looking at before all these injuries? I know you said double there, but do you think that Wolves were actually looking for 80?
I think, before all the injuries, and I'm talking a long time ago, he was rated more highly than Diogo Jota, more highly than, I know Ruben Neves is a different type of player, and he was a serious, like, top player in the making. You know, it seems a long time ago. It's COVID, wasn't it, when he got that injury, I think. Yeah. So it's at that level, there was an 80 million player there, unquestionably. But now, you know, a lot of water's gone under the bridge since then. So I imagine it's a bit of a conundrum for the recruitment department, because there will always be that tipping point. You know, when do you hold off? When do you hold off? When do you hold off? And when you say, actually, we'll take that and move on.
Yeah. Do you think that Neto himself will also be edging for a move?
Yeah, I think he's probably, he feels a bit left out now. I think everyone else of the top players from that George Mendes stable have moved on, and he hasn't. So I think he'd be keen to go. And I think he said he'd give it this season, you know, sort of. And I think he'd expect to go in the summer, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see another Nunes situation on the hands if he's not sold by start of August. Do you think he could, from the outset, he looks like one of those players who could probably chuck his dolls out the pram a little bit. But
Nunes was all right, you know. Nunes was, I remember doing it, like, I think a corporate something with him once, and he's funny and he's a good lad. But then if they get ideas in their heads and stuff, and you know, promises that imagined or real, then yeah, they can, I suppose. Lots of them can turn, can't they?
I think it'd be different with Neto as well, because he's sort of pretty much been at Wolves since he was a boy, really. So, and I think you would have seen the reaction that Nunes got after he did what he did. I think there's certain ways to, quote unquote, force a move out of a club, and refusing to go to training and stuff is the lowest of the low, really. So I think Neto, although, you know, he can hand in a transfer request, but as long as he doesn't do what Nunes do or tweet, "Head's gone," like Stephen Fletcher did back in the day, I think it'd be all right.
I don't think it is now. The transfer requests are probably not very clear that he wants to leave.
Yeah, I think that would have been a conversation he probably had before January, to be honest.
He's got a lot of credit in the bank there, as well, Neto. He's given us a lot of good moments. I know he's been... Yeah, I think with Neto, it's a bit different, right? Because he's had, like, two very long-standing injuries with us, and we gave him a new contract just coming back off his dislocation of his knee as well. So we've looked after him as well. So I think he'd treat the club with a bit of respect. And I've got a question, Johnny, around that as well. Like, do you think it's a case of going to the highest bidder with Neto, or has he got aspirations? Do you think it's a bigger, you know, top European club he's going to? And I mean that from, if the highest bidder was Saudi, we saw Neves go to Saudi. Do you think Neto could move there? Or do you
that was left field for me. All the indications from Neves was that he wanted Champions League football. Everything that was coming out of from his side of it was, it's Champions League football, and then he goes and does that was so left field, that move. So I would, you know, I'd imagine Neto wants Champions League football, but I don't know, you know, without knowing what he's prepared to do and where he's prepared to go, I don't know.
There's been quite a lot of rumors linking him with obviously Arsenal, but City as well, Johnny. I thought he'd
been the perfect City player before before that injury, you know, when they sort of spent all that money on Jack Grealish and it didn't really happen for him straight away, I thought Neto would have been a much, much better fit for City. Yeah. And, you know, Bernardo Silva's going to need replacing reasonably soon as well. A fit Neto, I think, is absolutely made for Manchester City.
Mm. Mendes has got quite close ties as well with City, hasn't he? So
yeah, he has, yeah.
Yeah, so that could be an option. Daniel Plant has asked, can Johnny give us any insight into transfer plans for the summer, and if we have any money to spend even without player sale generations?
I mean, from what I gather, the main points of strengthening that they're after are as a centre back, a centre forward, and they're looking at the keeper situation. I mean, Jose Sarr's a good keeper, he makes a lot of good saves. I think the coaches, I'm not sure they think he's the right man for what they're trying to do on the ball. And he's maybe not the most willing to sort of adapt. So I think, whereas Sarr's fine, you know, he's a top level keeper. I think probably the coaching staff are probably thinking, is there someone we can get who is better with his feet, better with distribution, and can maybe learn the system a bit better? Sarr hasn't really grown much this season and hasn't really developed the way I think Gary O'Neill and the coaches would have liked. So I imagine the keeper is something they're looking at, but it's absolutely a forward and a centre back. I mean, the ones, Shea Adams is obvious because of the fact that he'll be free and he's been linked before. I'm doing the Southampton game tomorrow night, actually. So, I wouldn't be surprised if they just went in, got him to get the numbers off. There's another one they like, the lad at Bristol City, Tommy Conway. Do you know anything about him?
He was linked before. That's a genuine interest.
But again, they're not sort of players that you'd run to and think, oh, that's our 20 goal a season answer. But I think Gary O'Neill's shown really that he can work with players, develop them, and play a system where you don't need that out and out target man. It'd be interesting to see what happens there. They do need a centre back as well, so I don't think it's any surprise that, you know, centre forward, centre back, and possible goalie is the priorities. And then it's just a case of what level of spending's available. I think, you know, Fosun want Wolves to be self-sufficient. I think they've written off 190 million, is it, in loans? They've been pretty generous and pretty good owners in that sense. I think that from their perspective, they probably just don't want to keep writing off lots and lots of money. So, you know, the model was always player trading initially when Fosun were looking to buy a club back in the day. And then they entered into that partnership with the J-League Japanese team recently.
Is that right? Yeah, correct. Yeah. Wolves,
yeah. And that's all about sort of development of players, youth players, particularly academy players over in Asia, and maybe bringing them to Europe. So it all goes back to this player trading model of, you know, bringing in potential talent, improving its value, which, you know, it's a very worthy model. And for a brief time with Chesterfield and when Nuno was here, it looked like a really good way of working. It's difficult. It's just a difficult way of working. But, there are gems out there, but sometimes you've got to wade through a lot of dross to get to it.
I think, I mean, Brighton are probably the gold standard, aren't they, from a player trading point of view, bringing players over and developing them. But on this podcast, we're not critical of Fosun's willingness to invest or write off debts. I think it's more the criticism around what they've done with the money. Spent a lot of money on shit over the last few years.
Yeah,
the recruitment's been an issue, hasn't it? But I guess it's sort of turning around a bit. If you look at the players who've excelled this season, there's been a lot of value, and a lot of value has been added to their initial fees. And I think, you know, Matt Hobbs would want to be worked more and more in that direction, and to continue that. I know that there has been large sums wasted, and it's tough. It's tough to see that. I think every club wastes quite a bit of money. There's no club that gets everything right. Maybe Brighton are the exception to that. But certainly Forest have got all sorts of expensive players kicking around in the reserves. So, yeah, it is. It's tough. It's a tough model to work. And you need to have a lot of structures in place. Wolves are still at that early stage, I think, in terms of their growth. And the structures they have in place. So I think, you know, it's one of those that'll take time.
Yeah. Gurpreet Dillon has asked, any news on Fosun seeking new investors into the club as reported earlier in the year?
I think that's just an ongoing search. It's absolutely ongoing search. I don't think there's they've changed tack in terms of that one. They're open about seeking investment. They still are quite open about that. They've had investment in certain areas, but they probably always want more. It's tough. We've seen with everything that's going on now, there seems to be this elite level of top clubs who've got the wiggle room, and then everybody else seems to be really struggling. I know the owners were a bit I don't know if frustration's too strong a word, but they're slightly frustrated that Wolves were bracketed in this FFP danger, as in Wolves, almost as if they'd been taking their eye off the ball and weren't, you know, being astute and prudent. Wolves were never in danger of FFP. And that, it's funny you talked about the Neves transfer at the beginning, because he went at the end of June last year. And if Wolves had been in any danger, Wolves could have changed their accounting period.
Yeah.
To the end, Wolves' latest set of accounts, 2022-23, goes to the 31st of May. Now, Aston Villa have changed their accounting period to the end of June. You're allowed to do that. They've done that this year. And that would have taken the Neves money into that 22-23 period. But they didn't even need to do that. You know, Neves is in next year's accounts. So Wolves were always quite comfortable in that sense. And you know, we're never, ever in danger of FFP. It's something ongoing. I mean, the Mateus Nunes sale wasn't needed as part of that. So they're in a reasonably, you know, they're well run. But I guess the question is, how much do they want to invest going forward? I know they invested a lot initially. And I'm not sure it's in their model just to keep investing without a return.
No, I do get it. I think fans do understand it, but especially this season where the expectations were so low, and then to have the season that we've had, I feel like fans feel a little bit shortchanged the way that they're...
Yeah, because there's always that, you know, it goes back to that Coventry game. You never know when you're going to be in that position again. It felt like a chance missed. And for all that Wolves have had a great season under Gary O'Neill and things have been worked out really well compared to the mess they were in a week before the season started, sometimes you think, you know, that moment against Coventry, we were so well placed. If we'd have just added a bit more, strengthened, we could have really kicked on. But and obviously it hasn't. So there's always going to be frustration in that sense. That what is it, a chance missed? And only time will tell if that's a chance missed. If Wolves are never challenging for Europe again and aren't challenging for a place at Wembley again, then it will, you'll look back on it in years to come and think that was an opportunity missed. But I think only what follows from now on will really be the sort of, you know, we'll set out whether or not this season has been a chance missed or not.
What? Go on, Dave. Sorry, mate.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think the one thing in terms of the finances and transfers, what confuses people, or what people tend to get confused about, is the fact that, especially like publicly, there's been a little bit more from the club, especially since January, saying we don't need to sell in the summer. And that's right. If we're, like you just said, Johnny, we're not in any sort of danger of FFP or profit and sustainability or whatever. But what people do need to realise that Wolves, if they are going to be pushing this sort of self-sustainable model, yeah, Wolves don't need to sell. So we could go in with this exact same squad next year. But if we want to buy, we will probably have to move some players on. And that's the biggest thing. People are saying, well, you said we don't need to sell, so why aren't we buying any players? So you've got a grand total of zero there. So if you want to buy players, you have to sell. So I think that's the main issue that people need to sort of appreciate, I think. And look, I think back in the Championship in the early days of the Premier League when they were almost free spending, and you know, without COVID, we could be having a completely different conversation as well. I think that had a big impact on things. But there was always going to be a time, you know, and it's easily done. I think there's like Brighton are the perfect example. I know we've mentioned them a few times there, but I think in terms of ignoring January, because I think that was a frustrating window, but under Matt Hobbs, the first January under Lopetegui, I believe most, if not all of those signings were a success. And a lot of the lads he brought in the summer have been really good players as well. So hopefully from the summer onwards, if the strategy turns out to work, it could be, you know, we can judge it a bit more next year, but hopefully it'll be a much more productive summer coming up.
Yeah, hopefully. And again, it's just about getting the balance right. I think what stood out this season is the lack of balance maybe in the squad, and that just makes the numbers look worse than they are. You just think because it's an obvious thing about balance, rather than, you know, we've never once been in a position where every position feels covered. It's just had that little bit of imbalance to it that makes it look perhaps worse than it is.
What do you think happened in January, Johnny? Because fans were told, and even O'Neill had come out and said, you know, Sasha won't be going anywhere until we've got a replacement. We're definitely getting a replacement in, and then end up with Silver and Kolarčić going. I know Kolarčić was more from the, you know, humility reasons, letting him go, baby on the way and whatnot. But then to end up with less than we started, it was a bit of a kick in the teeth for fans, I know now.
Yeah, it was. I think in the end, the numbers that they wanted to work with just weren't there with who they were looking to bring in. And they just, it was just a business decision, I think, without knowing the ins and outs of it. There was obviously a position where there were one or two deals possibly in place if the numbers worked. And then for whatever reason, those numbers didn't work for the club. So they weren't able to do that or chose not to do it.
Yeah, do you think any, it could be to do with anything around still having to pay a percentage of Johnny's wages? So I know that was, he's on quite big money at Wolves, and I believe they're still paying a percentage.
Yeah, it might have been. It might have been without knowing the ins and outs of it. Yeah. You know, just there's things like that. Things like that emerge all the time, really. And it's, you know, there are numbers like that that we're not really privy to that are factored into things like that. Yeah, so it could be without.
Do you know, I don't know if you mentioned Matt. So in terms of the strikers we were looking at, Johnny, obviously the most notable one was Brozier, but I think I remember you mentioning possibly was Carlos Vinicius someone they looked at as well.
Yeah, Carlos Vinicius was the one they were genuinely looking at. Brozier was never likely. I spoke to the people who were on the Fulham side of the deal when he went to Fulham, and it was never really a serious destination for Brozier. The numbers definitely weren't working with that one. Absolutely not. And I think the player wanted to stay in London as well, from what I gather. Whereas Vinicius was somebody who was definitely, they had a look at, and again, I without being privy to the numbers and the ins and outs of why he went somewhere else in the end. But Carlos Vinicius was the one that was, if something might have happened, it could have been there.
Wolves had looked at him previously, hadn't they, Dave? When he was at Benfica.
I think before he went to Benfica, because we couldn't get a work permit apparently back then.
Before he went to Spurs, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah.
Because his goal record at Benfica was quality, wasn't it?
And was he at Monaco as well?
Napoli as well.
I knew it was Napoli, yeah.
Napoli and Monaco.
Yeah, so he had a really good record, to be fair. I don't think he's an awful player. I think he would, in times like now when we're desperate for someone, that's why I keep looking at all the players that we're linked with. I know the Brozier, the finance, that's what I heard, Johnny, as well. Financially, it just didn't make sense for the club. But anyone in the commentary game or anything, an extra attack could have been, and for you guys as well.
I know. It's just having that option off the bench, isn't it? But I was saying before we came on, you know, yesterday sat down behind the bench, the Fulham bench, and Jimenez and Traore were on it, and Brozier as well. And the idea of bringing any of them on, it's just a great option for a coach to have that. And there's times this season where Gary O'Neill's just looked at his bench and he hasn't had the option that he really wants, and that's frustrating. But hopefully in the summer, that'll be, you know, if he has the opportunity to do a whole summer with the players, if they get the sort of players in that they want, hopefully then those circumstances won't be here next season.
New contract for O'Neill's. There's talks of that being a possibility in the summer. I know it was a 3-year deal to start with anyway, but do you think that Wolves are a little bit scared of him maybe going elsewhere after the season he's had?
Yeah, it's a thought. I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but if we're starting next season without Gary O'Neill in charge, I wouldn't be shocked. But that doesn't mean I think he's going to move, or doesn't mean I've heard he's going to move. Not at all. It's just that I wouldn't be shocked because I think people are looking at him. The West Ham stuff never goes away. So, I don't think he's got any reason to feel unsettled or anything like that. But I do think, you know, football's football and things happen. So what Wolves... And what every club has to do, and what Brighton have done really, really successfully, and what Wolves probably aren't in the position yet to do successfully, is to move between head coaches without maximum disruption. And Brighton have even taken it one stage further. They've moved between sporting directors as well, and they've recycled sport, or they've evolved with their sporting director and their head coaches, and it hasn't disrupted them. And Wolves aren't quite there yet. Wolves aren't in a position where, say, in a nightmare scenario, Matt Hobbs and Gary O'Neill leave, then there's a massive void there. And Wolves perhaps haven't got the structures in place to cope with that without a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth yet. So I think every club at the top should always be looking at worst case scenario. Where are you without your head coach, and where are you without your sporting director, and how quickly and how can that be overcome in the least disruptive manner? And, you know, I think as Wolves grow as a Premier League club, then you'd like to think that they can be in a position where they're, where those disruptions are don't make a big difference. I mean, and to give Fosun immense credit, it's Wolves are about, you know, going into their seventh successive season in the Premier League next year. That's, you know, completely unheard of in my lifetime as following the club, seven successive seasons in the top flight. So in many respects, although Wolves have been in the Premier League for several seasons now and Fosun have been owners for 9 or 8 years, whatever it is, in many respects, there's a lot that still has to evolve, and there's a lot of organic development still to take place.
Yeah, I think my only concern is that it comes to talks in the summer and Fosun or the board tell O'Neill, look, we've not a lot of money to spend. You've got to work what you got, get a couple of frees in. And he says, you know what? West Ham are without a manager, just sack Moyes. I'm off.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't know what Fosun are planning to do in that sense. So, yeah, who knows? You know, I remember last summer there was all this talk about Fosun selling up, which I know sort of within the club was frustrating for them because, you know, they've shown in many areas their levels of commitment. And this recent purchase of, or recent partnership, I should say, with the Japanese club shows that they're, you know, that they want to put down roots and they want to evolve and they want to develop. But I guess, as with anything, there'll always come a day when the head coach leaves. There'll always come a day when the owners change. I can see why you have those fears. Yeah, I can see why you have those fears.
I was going to say, for Gary O'Neill playing for West Ham as well, there's always going to be that little connection there, isn't there? Whether it's a soft connection or not, that they're obviously quite a, well, you know, they're an ambitious club. They've got, you know, they spend money. They've got a big following. I think if West Ham made a play for O'Neill, I think it'd be very difficult for him to turn that down. That's just my honest opinion looking at it.
Yeah.
Taking my walk off, I think it'd be tough.
Quite possibly. And then would Wolves go for Rob Edwards on the same sort of lines? Who knows? Yeah.
They do like it, don't they? They do like Edwards.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, didn't they offer him the job when
he had a meeting? He met with them last time around. I don't know what wasn't offered, but he met with them.
The terms weren't great, were they? Was it almost like interim charge and then see what?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But he definitely met with them.
I think we said last time it would have been interesting when Lopetegui was on his way out. If Rob Edwards wasn't in the situation he was in with Luton, I think he would have jumped at the chance then. Well, obviously, when you've just got promoted of a team then. But I think he's proved, yeah. You know, I think everyone thought they'd be rock bottom and really, really struggling.
The he's fact done that an astounding job.
Like, yeah. Game week 33, 34, and he's still competitive then. Yeah.
Yeah, they're playing way above their levels because they've got no right to still be in with the shouts. The players, because the players aren't good enough, but the way they've developed and the way that he's changed his tactics compared to the opposition, in the way, you know, in a bit of similarities with Gary Neal in that sense, is on a sort of lesser scale, with a less talented squad. He's done wonders. And also he showed with Forest Green when he was three at the back and scoring goals for fun and passed teams to death. And then he's gone to Luton and shows you can do it in a more direct way, surrender possession. I mean, in a sense, he's a really bright coach in that sense. And a lot of clubs should be looking at them when you have to get that edge on the pitch because you're not financially well resourced and can't just buy the best players. He's your man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think we covered quite a lot there, mate. It's a lot to talk about. I've enjoyed that, Johnny. Do you want to just give a little plug again for your event on the 14th?
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. So it's Tuesday the 14th of May, and we're getting the 1974 League Cup winners back together for one last time. It's in support of the Wolves Foundation the night as well, and it's all taking place at the Wolverhampton Grand Theatre. It should be a great laugh. We've got a few surprises in store, and it should be real fun. So go to the Wolverhampton Grand Theatre website, get tickets. Buy them for your mum and dad or your grandma and granddad, whatever it is.
Cool. We'll also leave a link in the description down below, and also put a tweet out or Instagram post. Johnny, where can people find you if they don't already follow you?
At Sky Johnny P.
On Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah, and then Johnny Phillips Insta on Instagram.
Wonderful stuff, Dave. How about
yourself? I'm not on TikTok, lads. Sorry.
No, on TikTok.
TikTok.
Jordan's actually meant to do a dance for us on TikTok. We normally have a game at the end of the quiz, like a career path game, where I read out a player's career path and you have to get in and say who it was. And he got whitewashed, but he's still yet to do the dance on TikTok.
So. No, when we do the end of season pod, we'll make sure he does it.
And also, if we've said this before, the account's been banned. It's nothing to do with me. I'll do it. I have to do it. Look, I made a better bet, and you got to do it, haven't you? So, looks at me. I'm going to start dancing.
Yeah. Dave, where can people find you? Should they wish to follow you, mate?
It's at Dave as a party on Twitter and Instagram, and TikTok if you want, actually.
Yeah, I'm not on TikTok. So George7 at Instagram and Twitter.
I have been enjoying your little TikToks, Dave, your little match day experience vlogs.
They're all right, aren't they? The West Ham one did quite well.
Yeah, different. We are talking Wolves across all platforms. If you have liked the video, let us know. If you're on Spotify or Apple Music, please leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, like the video. Subscribe if you haven't. And yeah, make sure you get your tickets for the Wolves Wembley Wonders on the 14th of May, the Wolverhampton Grand Theatre with Johnny Phillips and a whole host of others. Tickets for that will be in the description down below. But until next time, have a great week. Take care. See you soon.